Thanks, Peter, and you left off my promotion of our wines. First of all, I'll just say a little bit about Riga. We are the National Industry Association representing entirely or focusing entirely on renewable energy. I've put the logos of some of our companies represented on our board so you can see that we do represent about 95% of the renewable energy generation capacity in Australia. And companies like Pack Hydro, Andrew's boss, Rob Grant, is on our board. Hydro Tasmania, Pat Lennon is on our board. AGL, Petrotherm, Gary referred to Petrotherm earlier. Whilst they're not a major renewable energy generator at this time, they certainly plan to be. And Mark Fogarty from the CVC Group is on our board, and as you can see, Truen Solar Systems. Now, our board itself reflects the very diverse nature of the renewable energy industry. The diverse technologies, and they're all at various stages of development. Roger referred to hydropower, which really underpins renewable energy in Australia. It's still the largest, by far, single proportion of output. We also have the various issues affecting some of the more intermittent generators like wind and solar PV, all of which ultimately rely on long-term storage solutions. We also represent the emerging technologies like geothermal, and we're very, very keen to promote the capacity of geothermal. I'll say a little bit more about that later. Because it's certainly attractive to policymakers who have concerns about energy security and baseload issues. There is an enormous potential for globally for renewable energy, and Australia really has to make sure that it gets the policy settings. And there's been a lot of talk about consistency in policy settings, which are absolutely vital to the long-term growth and health of the industry. To get them right now, so that we can be major suppliers in the future, and it's sort of getting to the point where there's nothing much surer than death taxes and climate change, and so the world will be in need of clean energy solutions, and we really want to see our country positioned as a major supplier. This is really why we're all focusing on changes in energy policy, and it's the emissions growth challenge. And you can see the business as usual line without new policy settings. We're heading up now to about 250% over 1990 levels if we don't make some significant policy changes. And this is where we need to be, 50% below. And of course, there's a lot of talk. I mean, the NETS scheme is focusing on 60% below. I guess the targets are relatively arbitrary, but the point is we really have to turn around this line to get it back down somewhere around here by 2050. And even if you replaced every new power station in Australia from tomorrow with gas, you're still not really heading in the right direction. So that's our national challenge. This is a little graph that MMA did up for us to show that it doesn't have to be there doesn't have to be any major jolts or shocks to the economy, that the amount of clean energy that needs to come on screen to get to that target by 2050 can be a readily steady increase. This would be the gradual retirement from the market of the higher emitting technologies, and again, that can work in conjunction with emissions trading, and the natural lifetime of the generation infrastructure. So Australia needs tailored policy solutions that respond to our own national challenges and our own national resource base and our own national capabilities. We have a Let DF and Ready grant scheme that's several hundred million dollars. But the point that the renewable energy industry wants to make, while not grizzling about only several hundred million dollars, is that those sorts of policy measures alone, Gary referred to the need for a suite of policy measures, and we absolutely agree. There is no single silver bullet policy solution in the same way that there is no single silver bullet technology solution. So you need the sort of Let DF demonstration fund that demonstrates the capability of the technologies, but then you need a market measure, and MREP operated very effectively in that way, in bringing the lowest cost available technologies into the national electricity market, as does VRET, NRET, potentially WARET, potentially TREX in Tasmania, and we're still saying to Gary we need a SARET in South Australia, but we're not getting a very, very favourable response. These sorts of target measures identify clearly to industry and to liable parties what level of clean energy needs to come into the market over what time frame, and allows the market to buy the cheapest options. And so the renewable energy industry thinks that's a very good way of designing policy to bring about clean energy changes. Just an example for you of some of the targets that exist at the moment. China, a 15% renewable energy target by 2020. Within that, there's a massive wind target of about 30,000 megawatts by 2020, which Roaring Forties and Hydro Tasmania have identified as a very important strategic business opportunity for them, and they're selling Australian expertise into the global market, just as we want to do. California, 33% by 2020. The fourth or fifth largest economy in the world, and that's a massive target. So anybody who says Australia can't do it is wrong. Underpinning all that, over time, we need the sort of emissions pricing framework that Gary talked more about and knows more about than I do. And it is challenging for industry to plan without the commitment of government behind it. And whilst it's good to see the Commonwealth moving into the space now, industry would love to see the Commonwealth and the states get together and work it out, as I know the states would love to see the Commonwealth get together and work out how it's going to work. And the renewable energy industry is very concerned that there's so much focus on emissions trading that it is not presented, again, as the silver bullet. There's concerns about other policy measures creating distortions in the market. But if you rely on emissions trading as the only policy tool, you're not going to see, whether it's renewable energy or any other form of clean energy, you're not going to see a vibrant clean energy industry developed in Australia in time to position itself for the global market opportunities. I just went over some of the existing schemes that the industry is looking at, and I do refer to South Australia's target as an aspirational target because we may well get there in South Australia. But the important point at the bottom is that MRED is fully subscribed, so the industry is currently building to the state targets, and that's actually not producing the optimum outcomes in terms of perhaps cost and the best use of the available resources, because if you've got a wind project in South Australia, until last Saturday it's unlikely to get up because there was no measure in South Australia or Tasmania or anywhere else apart from Victoria. But now with the election of the Labor government in New South Wales, their new NRET scheme is going to enable projects or provide eligibility for projects built anywhere within the NEM. So these sorts of election result outcomes and policy decisions are providing great challenges for the industry to understand and make predictions based on three-year government terms, which is probably not the best way to run energy policy. There's a lot of talk about the cost of these sorts of policy solutions, and I just wanted to put some of it in perspective, and I like to put it in perspective whenever I get the opportunity. This is just some back-of-the-envelope calculations. There's nothing scientific, and it hasn't been run by anybody's modelling company. But if you look at, there's around 45,000 megawatts of installed capacity in the national market. MRET installed roughly 2,000 megawatts of generation capacity or equivalent, and by equivalent we mean solar water heaters displace the need to increase output from coal-fired power stations. The price impact was approximately, this is 2005 figures, the price impact is approximately $150 million. That's the number of RECs remitted in 2005 multiplied by the maximum penalty, so it was the maximum cost, not necessarily the cost that was actually achieved. The MRET impact on prices was less than 0.5% if you look at total electricity price sales that year being $30 billion. So it's not going to break the bank. And all this talk about it being too expensive, the impact on economies of these sorts of clean target mechanisms is clearly a little bit out of proportion. And another figure here, for those of you who have seen the report, AGL and WWF released a report on what impact, the price impact of policy mechanisms on greenhouse and energy policy. And one of their conclusions was that Australians could pay as little as $250 each to achieve a 40% reduction in greenhouse emissions by 2030 from the electricity sector. That's not a massive price, and we've really got to put this debate into perspective. When we see things like reports released and the headlines are 40% increase in energy prices, it's not an accurate. It's a lifting of a paragraph out of a report or a sentence out of a report. It's not an accurate portrayal of what the price impact might be if we take the approach that we looked at in that earlier graph. I love this graph. It actually hasn't come up as well as I might have liked. There is you can see behind there, it's actually a green shaded area from here down to here. You can only tell where the horizontal lines are taken out, unfortunately. We call that the renewables cost envelope. This is a cost, for those of you who can't see it, in dollars per megawatt hour along this axis out to 2050. So this is the learning curve, the cost curves of the various technologies that will ultimately be the solutions that are available now. We can't cost the technologies that we don't know about yet. But this cost envelope shows the highest cost renewable technologies being about there and the lowest cost coming down under here. Now, Gary talked a fair bit about geothermal, and that lowest line is actually the geothermal line. So from about 2025, it's predicted that generation costs from geothermal energy will be less than brown coal. If you move an emissions trading incentive through that line, you get geothermal, you know, wow, far more competitive with even brown coal. This line here is nuclear power. We see it coming from about $70 a megawatt hour down to about $60 a megawatt hour by 2050. This graph was produced not by Riga and in a back office somewhere. It was produced for us by MMA, and they did a lot of the modelling work underpinning the National Emissions Trading Scheme for the states. They have a very good reputation in Canberra, and we checked them out before we used them. And in fact, we've been told by departments in Canberra that our report is, unlike some of the others, very easy to read because the assumptions are clear and the data sources are very clear, and that's exactly what we asked them to do. Through here, we probably see wind coming down around through this line here as well, roughly towards the bottom of the envelope. So our technologies are more than competitive with the other clean energy technologies that will be deployed into the market over time. So we're more than happy to compete in any market scheme that might or might not be developed by government over time. This is just to show you the potential global export capacity for the industry. Whilst renewables are only about an 18% share of the global market now, the IEA have done some work to look at what share we could potentially have by about 2030, and with positive policy settings like the sorts of things California and China are doing, that share could grow to about 40%. But I suspect, Peter, you would know more about that than I would. The IEA is potentially predicting that 40% of the world's energy supply could come from, or electricity supply could come from renewables with the sorts of policy settings that we're arguing for. Australia is a great innovator, and I think it's really important to point this out, and we have our annual forum in Melbourne next week, at which we're really going to be putting under the microscope the emerging technologies in our sector. But we have a reputation globally for leadership in many of these areas. Roger referred to the reputation of hydropower on the international stage, and Hydro Tasmania have to take a lot of credit for that in developing the sustainability guidelines for the International Hydropower Association, which are now used by the World Bank for approval of funding, and the IHA are now seriously backing these guidelines in order to ensure that hydropower is sustainable around the world when new schemes are developed. And that's come from Australia, and I think it's something that we in our industry are certainly very proud of. When we say we lead the world in solar innovation, I was told by the Australian Greenhouse Office that they were at a solar conference in Germany a couple of weeks ago, at which Australia's leadership position, particularly demonstrated by Solar Systems Technologies, was acknowledged as being one of the two leading companies on the world stage. Again, something we should be very proud of in Australia. We also have, from the exploration and the R&D that's been done so far in geothermal, again, we're seen as being world leaders, and we have some of our companies looking through Europe, Spain, Hungary, China. There's an AP6 project with Australia and China through Petrotherm to develop the geothermal resources across the world. And again, we are acknowledged as leading in terms of understanding geothermal processes. And the same in the wind industry. Whilst we might talk about European manufacturers coming to Australia, we still have the wind forecasting and many of the other services that go toward making up the wind industry. We have a leadership position acknowledged globally as well. This is more for your entertainment than your information. Photos are always nice. This is one of Solar Systems power stations in the Northern Territory. It's not big on the national scale. I think it's less than 1 megawatt. Solar Systems have a very aggressive rollout plan, which is 5 gigawatts by 2030. And when you look at the Californian target, which is 3 gigawatts by 2020, there are huge opportunities for Solar Systems to achieve this this target, and we're still only in 2007. I won't say too much more about geothermal energy because Gary pretty well covered it, but a report done for the Commonwealth Government in 1994 indicated that there were 7,500 years' worth of heat energy to supply electricity into the national market. We're so often concerned about barriers like the transmission issue that if we look at the resource and the potential for the price reductions from the generation of electricity from geothermal, the industry itself believes that those transmission issues are going to be not easily overcome, but the economics will be overcome by the cost of providing the energy itself. Just some figures that Gary repeated, so I won't go over them again. And again, another photo. This is Geodynamics Field Habanero 2, where they are. They've actually got it to work, despite some problems. It looks like if it wasn't for the tree, you could potentially be on the moon, couldn't you? So, in summary, Australia is a great generator, a great generator of innovation. We need innovative policy that responds to our own innovation and our own special expertise. There is no silver bullet, and it is a huge commercial opportunity that we are really hoping governments get behind us and back our innovation and our own investments. The industry has invested very heavily in the Australian economy. We supply about 8% of the national power, and it's a very important long-term solution. Thank you very much for your invitation this morning.